Welcome to another deep dive, and today we're going to be talking about the case of Teresa Schiavo. This case set off all sorts of conversations across the country about end-of-life care and how much power the government really has. It's a big one. Ready to jump in?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fascinating one. What's really interesting is how it sort of like played out on so many different levels. Like you said, this wasn't just like a family going through something terrible. It was in the courts and it was in the news, and even the government was trying to get involved.
Exactly. We're talking 15 years in court, the Supreme Court, even Congress.
Wow.
But let's go back to the start. 1990, Teresa Schiavo was only 27 when she has a cardiac arrest, and it puts her in a persistent vegetative state. PVS, as the doctors call it.
And PVS, we should explain what that actually means, because a lot of people get it mixed up with a coma or something like that. With PVS, it means there's just no awareness, there's no thinking or anything, and it can't be reversed. That's really important for this case.
Right, and that's when things get really complicated, legally and medically. Teresa's husband, Michael Schiavo, he becomes her legal guardian. And because of conversations they had before she got sick, he believes that she wouldn't want to be kept alive like this. So he goes to court to get permission to remove her feeding tube. But then her parents, the Schindlers, they say, absolutely not.
And that's really the core issue. Who gets to make that decision when someone can't speak for themselves? On one side, you have Michael, who thinks he's doing what Teresa wanted. But on the other, you have her parents, who are holding on to hope, fighting to keep her alive. And that fight went on in the courts for over a decade.
Before we get into all of that, I think we need to talk about the guardian ad litem. Can you explain a little more about what they did and the concerns they had?
Sure. Back in 98, Richard Pierce was appointed as the guardian ad litem. What that means is he was there to look out for what was truly best for Teresa, separate from the family or anyone else. And here's the interesting part. He actually didn't think Michael should be the guardian because there might be a conflict of interest there.
Wait, so before any of this really started, there were already some red flags about Michael being in charge. What kind of conflicts of interest are we talking about?
Well, at the time, Michael was already with someone else. He even had kids with her. So the Schindlers were saying that that and maybe getting money if Teresa passed away meant that maybe he wasn't really making decisions that were only in her best interest.
So from the very beginning, there were questions about whether Michael was really thinking about what Teresa wanted or if his own life and what he stood to gain was influencing his choices.
Exactly. And we'll come back to that as we go through everything that happened in court. But it's important to remember that from the start, there were doubts about Michael.
Okay, so the court, even with those concerns, did say Michael could be Teresa's guardian. So take us through how it all started. What happened in court?
Well, in 2000, Judge Greer ruled in favor of Michael and said the feeding tube could be removed. But to really understand that decision, we need to talk about this clear and convincing evidence standard.
Now, for those of us who aren't lawyers, what does clear and convincing evidence even mean? How is that different from other stuff you hear in court?
Good question. Basically, clear and convincing evidence is stronger than preponderance of the evidence, which you hear a lot, but it's not as strong as beyond a reasonable doubt, which is for criminal cases. It means that the court has to be pretty much sure, not just kind of maybe sure, that Teresa would have wanted the life support to end if she could say so herself.
So they weren't just saying it was kind of likely she would have wanted this. They were saying it was really, really likely based on what they knew. So how did they figure that out? Was it just because Michael said that's what she wanted?
No, it was a lot more than that. They listened to a lot of different people, friends, family, people who had talked to Teresa about this kind of stuff before. The idea is to figure out what the patient themselves would have wanted if they could tell you, even though they can't. It's called substituted judgment.
That makes sense. So it wasn't just taking Michael's word for it. They were looking at everything they could to get an idea of what Teresa really believed and what she valued. But of course, the Schindlers weren't just going to say, okay, and go home, right?
Oh, definitely not. This is where things get really crazy. The Schindlers appealed that decision over and over again, what they call Schiavo I through five. Each time trying to say that Michael shouldn't be the guardian or that taking out the feeding tube was wrong. They even said they had new evidence that maybe Teresa wasn't really in a vegetative state after all.
So they were really fighting hard, challenging everything. What did the court say about all of that? About the new stuff they were trying to bring in?
The court looked at everything the Schindlers brought to them. They heard from more doctors and all kinds of stuff. But in the end, they stuck with what they said before. They said Teresa's condition couldn't be changed and that all the evidence still pointed to her wanting to end life support.
That must have been incredibly frustrating for the Schindlers. I mean, imagine being in their shoes, thinking your daughter could get better, but constantly hitting a wall with the courts.
Yeah, it's unimaginable. This case really shows just how tough it is when you have to make decisions for someone else, especially when it's life or death. You've got a family that loves each other, but there's no easy answer.
So after all that back and forth in Florida courts, did the Schindlers just give up? Or did they try to take it further outside of Florida?
It didn't stop there. This case went way beyond just Florida courts. It got the Florida legislature involved and even Congress.
Wow. So this wasn't just a family in court anymore. It is a national thing, a political thing. Tell me more about how the government got pulled into all of this.
In 2003, with all the media attention and people talking about it, the Florida legislature passed something called Terry's Law. It was really controversial because it was basically written just for this case.
Hold on. A law just for this one case? That's wild. What did Terry's Law actually do?
It basically said that the governor at the time, Jeb Bush, could tell the doctors to put Teresa's feeding tube back in, even though the court had said to take it out. It was really strange. And it made people wonder if the legislature was trying to overrule the courts, which is a big deal.
So you have the court saying one thing after years and years, and then the legislature basically saying, nope, we're doing it our way. Things must have been really tense at that point.
It was a big fight, with the legislature on one side and the courts on the other. But the legislature didn't win that fight. The Florida Supreme Court said Terry's Law was unconstitutional. They're basically saying that the legislature was going too far and trying to do the court's job.
Okay, so the Florida Supreme Court put the legislature back in its place and said the courts are the ones who decide these things, not politicians or public opinion. So what happened next? Did the Schindlers finally give up? Or did they take their fight all the way to the top, to the U.S. Supreme Court? They went all the way to the Supreme Court. Did they take the case?
They didn't. The Schindlers appealed, but the Supreme Court said no. And that was basically it. No more courts, no more laws, nothing. Judge Greer's decision from way back in 2000 to let Michael take out the feeding tube, that was the final word.
So after all those years, it ended where it started. The court said Michael had the right to make those choices for Teresa based on what they thought she would have wanted. But even though the legal stuff was over, this case didn't just go away, did it? It really got people talking all over the country.
Definitely. The Schiavo case became like a symbol for all these big questions we have as a society. Like, how do we decide about end-of-life care? Should the government be involved in our personal medical decisions? And what about when families disagree? Whose wishes matter more? It even made us think about what it really means to have a life worth living and who gets to decide when that life is over.
It's amazing how one case can bring up so many deep and personal questions. What do you think are some of the things we still remember from the Schiavo case? The things that really stuck with us?
I think one of the biggest things is that it made people think about advance directives. You know, those legal documents where you say what kind of medical care you want if you can't speak for yourself anymore. After the Schiavo case, it was like a wake-up call. People realized how important it is to talk about these things and make sure their wishes are written down.
It's like a safety net, right?
Yeah.
Make sure your voice is heard, even if you can't speak.
Yeah.
And it can prevent families from having to go through these terrible legal battles.
Exactly. It takes some of the burden off of your loved ones when they have to make those impossible decisions. The Schiavo case also showed us just how complicated it can be when someone else has to make those choices, especially when family members don't agree.
Right. Because even though Michael won in court, you can't forget about the Schindlers and how much they were hurting. They were fighting for what they thought was their daughter's life. We have to acknowledge that, even if they didn't get what they wanted in the end.
Absolutely. No one doubted that they loved Teresa. This case just shows how these kinds of situations can tear families apart. It's beliefs versus the law, and it's just heartbreaking. And remember, even before all the big court fights, there were those questions about Michael, about whether he really had Teresa's best interest at heart.
Right, because of what the guardian ad litem said about possible conflicts of interest. But if the court said Michael was okay, why do you think people still have those doubts? Why hasn't that gone away?
I think it's because there was just so much mistrust between Michael and the Schindlers. And the fact that Michael had started a new family while this was all going on, it just made people wonder, even if there was no proof he did anything wrong.
So even though the courts made their decisions based on the law, you can't separate that from all the emotions and personal stuff that was happening behind the scenes.
That's exactly it. And I think that's part of why we're still talking about the Schiavo case today. It reminds us that legal decisions, especially those about life and death, aren't always clear-cut. There are always different perspectives, different feelings, and people's lives are at stake.
It makes you think about what might have been different if Michael and the Schindlers had been able to talk to each other more openly, if they had trusted each other more. Maybe if they had been able to face this tragedy together instead of fighting each other in court.
Yeah, it's hard to say what would have happened, but it definitely makes you think about how important family relationships are in these kinds of situations.
So we've talked about PVS and what it means medically,
yeah.
About the years of court battles, about the ethical questions, and about the clash between individual rights and what society thinks is right. But before we finish up, I want to go back to something you said earlier about how the Schiavo case affected lawyers. What are some of the key takeaways for lawyers and law students who might have to deal with cases like this?
Well, from a practical standpoint, the Schiavo case shows just how important it is to have everything in writing and to be really clear with your clients, especially when you're talking about end-of-life planning.
Because in a way, the court was trying to put together a puzzle using bits and pieces of conversations, medical records, things like that, to figure out what Teresa would have wanted. It wasn't just about one person's opinion. It was about looking at all the evidence.
Exactly. And for lawyers, this case means that you have to be really thorough when you're gathering information. You have to understand the family dynamics, and you have to know the law and the ethics inside and out.
This case probably also reminds lawyers about conflicts of interest, especially in guardianship cases. Even though Michael was cleared, those early concerns from the guardian ad litem should make us really careful and make sure we're always putting our clients' needs first, above everything else.
Absolutely. And beyond just the legal stuff, the Schiavo case teaches us about the human side of law. It shows us that legal decisions have real consequences for real people and families.
It's about remembering that behind every case, there are real people going through incredibly difficult things, like loss and fear. It reminds us that being compassionate and understanding is just as important as knowing the law when we're dealing with these sensitive and emotional cases.
That's right. And as lawyers, it's our job to handle these cases with care, making sure that we're not just following the rules, but that we're being fair and doing what's right.
So we've looked at this case from all sides, the medical side, the legal side, the ethical side, and the family side. What's the main thing we should take away from this? What should we, as people, and especially as lawyers, learn from the Schiavo case?
Yeah, it really is. This one case brought up so many important discussions about life, death, and how much control we have over those things. But before we wrap this up, there's one thing we haven't really talked about. How did the Schiavo case change the law, if it did at all? Did it set new precedents, or did it just kind of highlight things that were already there? That's a good question. The Schiavo case didn't really create new laws, but it definitely made some existing legal ideas a lot clearer. Things about guardianship, the right to privacy, and how much power different parts of the government have.
Can you give some examples of what you mean? Like, how did those ideas become clearer because of this case?
Sure. So when it comes to guardianship, the Schiavo case really emphasized the idea of substituted judgment. The court was super careful about figuring out what Teresa herself would have wanted, instead of just going with what her family or her guardian thought was best. This case was a reminder that the patient's wishes are the most important thing, even if they can't say them out loud.
So it's not just about who has the legal right to make the decision, it's about making the decision that the person themselves would have made if they could. What about the right to privacy, especially when it comes to medical stuff? How did the Schiavo case affect that?
It really solidified the idea that privacy, especially in Florida, includes making your own medical decisions, even if you're not able to communicate anymore. The court said that if you're a competent adult, you have the right to say no to medical treatment, and that right doesn't go away just because you can't talk or make decisions anymore.
So even though Teresa was in a vegetative state, the court still said she had the right to refuse treatment based on what she had said and believed before. They didn't just ignore her wishes because she couldn't say them anymore.
Exactly. And then there's the whole issue of separation of powers, how different parts of the government are supposed to have different roles. The Florida Supreme Court really made a statement when they threw out terrorist law. They were basically saying that the courts are the ones who decide legal cases, not the legislature, and that trying to make laws for specific cases like this is dangerous because it messes with the court's independence.
So it was like a check on the legislature, telling them they can't just go around the courts when they don't like a decision. The courts have their job, the legislature has its job, and everyone needs to stay in their lane.
That's right. And beyond these specific legal points, I think the Schiavo case also changed how we as a society think about end-of-life care. It made us talk about things like advance directives, who gets to make decisions for someone else, and how important it is to respect what people want, even when things are tragic and families don't agree.
Yeah, it's like this case forced us to have conversations that we didn't really want to have before. It made us think about life and death, and even though there might not be any easy answers, at least we started talking and planning for those tough situations.
Definitely. And I think that's one of the most important things that came out of the Schiavo case. It got us talking, thinking, and hopefully making better decisions when we face similar situations in the future.
That's a great point. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap things up. To all our listeners, we hope this deep dive into the Schiavo case has helped you understand the legal issues, the ethical challenges, and how this case changed the way we approach end-of-life care. It's a case that we're still talking about today, and it makes us think hard about individual rights, family dynamics, and how the law affects our most personal decisions. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.